Good afternoon and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and I'm really excited that you're here today. So thanks for joining us. I hope you have your lunch, a drink. You can just take a couple of minutes, chill, catch your breath, and enjoy today's show. In the service of getting our conversation started, I'd love to turn it over to the executive producer of Lunch with Leaders, Youngin Cho from PMA, to give us a couple of housekeeping tips, as well as actually the star of today's show, Youngin's new haircut. Youngin, you babe, come on screen and show everyone your cute bob.
Thanks, Cindy. Thank you for joining Lunch with Leaders today and spending the next hour with us. When we work together, we can achieve so much more. And today we have a great example of two leaders working together doing just that. We know there are many other very successful diet models out there as well, and we want to hear from you. I invite you to please share your tips, success stories, and reflections in chat so that we can all learn from each other. If you have questions, use the Q&A window and have your cell phones ready for poll everywhere. I have one more announcement, if you can go to the next slide. We've been working hard behind the scenes to make the CMEC credit available to you for coming to Lunch with Leaders. I want to give a big shout out to Vaughn from the CME office. You may have heard from him this morning on an email. So there are three ways to get the credit. We are trying to make the process as easy as possible with options, and you can pick what works best for you. So along with the CME website and the app, the new texting feature is that as long as you have a profile, you can now text the event code 72289 to the number on the screen, 215-398-6728. If you've claimed a credit from the CME office, you will likely have a profile. Just make sure that you have your cell phone number that's matched the profile and linked with your email and pen key. Once the account is paired, you can text in today's event code and up to 24 hours after the session. Today's CME information is also on the LeadStrong website. And if you have questions, reach out directly to Vaughn on the email on the screen. And thanks to Gretchen for putting the information in chat. Back to you, Cindy.
Youngin, thanks so much. Kylie, I agree with you. Vaughn is awesome. So make sure you're taking advantage of these great CME offers. So again, welcome to Lunch with Leaders. This is where we come together as a leadership community to talk about some of the key challenges that we're facing. So for newbies, welcome. I'm glad to have you here. For those who are just veterans of the show, welcome back. As Youngin said, you can find all back episodes on the Lead Strong website. So make sure you're telling your friends and share the links with your fellow team members. We appreciate that. Thanks, Gretchen, for posting that. So let's talk about last week. Did you love it? I loved it. My hair is finally recovered from all of the teasing and the hairspray. So for those who missed it, I hope you'll go back and rewatch the everything I needed to learn, or everything I needed to know I learned from 80s pop culture show with author Chris Clues. We had a really good time, lots of nostalgia. And I think I've been singing Luca da, 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 for the past 2 weeks, just in reverence of the show and everything that you shared. Your comments were just so fun to go back and read. I agree with the comments. The energy was palpable. Would you mind going back one, Case? Yeah, just the mailbag. The mail was so fun, and it really was great to read. Thank you for sending in your feedback and your comments. I too found the energy palpable. It like fueled me for the last 2 weeks, so thank you for that. Who really knew that there would be so many salient points that we could take away from 80s pop culture? I have to give a shout out to my girl, the other Cindy M, Cindy Marcy from Durham. Thanks for your kind notes. It's very funny. Cindy and I, we accidentally get each other's emails quite a bit, and I'm always very relieved to realize that that email wasn't for me, because Cindy's job's like really hard, and I'm like, oh, I don't even know if I would know how to answer a lot of these emails. So, you know, sometimes I'm like, please, Cindy, tell me that this was meant for you, because I'm out of luck here. Cindy, I'm going to hold you to those note and the hug, so thank you for your kind words and taking the time. So, got joy? Three reminders. Number one, you can check out the Tint page, as well as the recording and the podcast of last week's show. Go look at these pictures. They're just so fun, and love seeing our friends and colleagues in the 80s, no matter how old they were. As well as our guest today, Tom Geekus, has a great picture there. Pass along the link to anyone who needs a breather. And don't forget to follow Chris Clues on social media. So thank you for all your great feedback and for attending last week. So got a couple of commercials first. Congratulations are in order for our health system. Before we get to unconscious bias, I just wanted to say that today is the official launch of Penn Medicine's newest family member, PHMC, Public Health Campus on Cedar Ave. Welcome. We are just so proud and excited to be extending our partnership into West Philadelphia. And so I want to just say a quick congrats to everyone who is involved, including the HUP team, IT, business development, and every single one of the Penn Medicine team members who have made this exciting day happen. Congratulations. We're hoping to get these folks on Lunch with Leaders at some time too soon. And we're excited to extend our healthcare system even greater. All right, so unconscious bias. Listen, this is like one of these moments where I'm like, I asked and you answered. We're really making great headway on getting our employees to take this critically important training, unconscious bias. And we're doing it. We have hit threshold. We're at 80.5%, which is great. Now, here's my challenge to you. By April 1st, so by the next time I see you on this show, I really want to encourage us to reach out a little bit further to high performance and get 90% of our entire Penn Medicine community to have taken this training so we can all be learning and sharing in our learning together. This is just so important for our success. So thanks for what you're doing. A little bit further push to be the high performers that we are would be great. Okay, final commercial. I know I said it last week, book club. Don't miss it. It's going to be really good. And the reason I'm saying it again is because it takes a little bit of time to read the book. I know you're busy. So download the application and register today. You'll get the link to get the free book, Mauro Gullin's 2030, How Today's Trends Will Collide and Reshape the Future of Everything. It is going to be awesome. I think we have like almost 600 people already enrolled. So let's really get the numbers up there. And if you're interested, spread the word. All right. Let's talk about today because it's going to be great. I love the adage, if you've seen one academic medical center, you've seen one. And it's so true. I know I came from like a lifetime ago, the NYU Langone Medical Center, and I was really struck by the differences in culture that Penn Medicine had relative to my experience there, despite it being only 90 minutes down the turnpike. And when I came here, it was like really great. I felt like the minute I walked in the door, I found my people. So many of you are my people, and our community of leaders are just, it's so special here. And one of the things that I appreciate the most is just the collaborative spirit and everyone's willingness to go above and beyond to help people. It just seemed to be baked into everything that we do here when I arrived 7 years ago and still to this day. And one of the things that Penn, in my opinion, just gets in terms of collaboration and what's at the heart of it is the dyad model. Watching you work hand in hand with your partners has been really amazing. And I love being a partner to so many of you. And watching whether it was old school UBCLs or chairs and COOs or corporate leaders and administrative leaders, watching you work together has been nothing short of a joy. And yet we don't always talk about this. We don't get under the hood, say, well, why do these partnerships work so well? And how is it at anchoring our success? So that's the intent of today's show, is to really get under the hood of successful dyads. And we have a dyad here today, and I hope that there are dyads that are watching that will also contribute their secrets to success in the chat. So I want to know what makes you your partnerships tick, where are the inherent struggles. I really want to raise the awareness and almost like walk a mile in somebody else's shoes so we can get even stronger at these. So those are the objectives for today. We're going to learn the importance of building physician and administrative partnerships and really strengthen this model and hear from everyone. So I know we took last week off, but I really am dying to know how you're feeling. So if you pull out your phones, you can text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333, and then you'll be in the survey. What emotions are you feeling today? And while you're responding, it's my pleasure to introduce our guests today. These two, they're special to me. They're like my OGs outside of HR and PMA. We go way back and we've worked closely together since my arrival here 7 years ago. Dr. Mike Parmasek is the chair of the Department of Medicine, and Tom Gakis, the chief operating officer for the Department of Medicine. Gentlemen, welcome. We're so lucky to have you. Thanks for saying yes to doing this. You can come on camera. Hey, Tom.
Hey,
how you doing? Great. All right, Casey, how are we doing on the poll? Let's see how people are feeling today. How are you feeling today? Overwhelmed, tired, accomplished, energized, refreshed, excited, hopeful. Ooh, I like seeing hopeful big. Meh. Warmer, yes. Spring is definitely here. Ambiguous. Overwhelmed, busy, swamped. Mike, Tom, do these words surprise you?
Not really. I think that it is a hopeful time. It's also a time where there's uncertainty. We've been living with uncertainty for a year. So I think the ambiguous thing resonates with me. Depending upon the last email I read, I'm either very hopeful or very concerned. And we've all learned to live with that. But the reality is that this certainly it resonates with me. And I'm seeing the word energized get bigger and bigger. Energy has never been a problem for me, I think it's fair to say. But I am incredibly excited about Hup Cedar. I think that this is our chance to give back to Philadelphia. It's something I've been looking forward to. I think it's something the university has wanted to do for a long time, and we are uniquely positioned to do it. And I talked to the people that were on last night. We started at midnight, and things are going okay so far. So that's very, very good for Penn, and it's good for West Philadelphia. I'm excited.
Me too. Tom, surprises of these words, do they make sense to you?
Yeah, they make a lot of sense. And I will say I as well. I sort of feel both hopeful and at times challenged. And it's almost like a sandwich in that regard. The work we do, when I'm focused on that, everything's moving along. At the same time, when you pull back and you think about everything that's happening, you can really appreciate the challenge. So it's almost like zooming in, zooming out on this, and it's both and.
Yeah, thanks. So I'm so glad to have you guys here. I feel excited to have this conversation. So thanks again for being my guest today. Mike, let's start with you. Did you always know you wanted to be the chair of medicine here at Penn Medicine?
Well, again, Cindy, I think people that know me well know that I spent most of my life telling everybody the one job I never wanted was to be chair of medicine. And I meant it. I mean, I was going way back to my days at University of Chicago, which was now 25 years ago, when Arthur Rubenstein, who was my chair of medicine at the time, we would talk about what did I ultimately want to do. And ultimately, I came to Penn before he did, which I keep reminding him of, because he told me I was ruining my career when I moved from Chicago to Penn. He was still the chair of medicine at the time. But in any case, I was loved my job being chief of cardiology. I think it was a great job. And I looked at the rest of the Department of Medicine and I said, it can't get any better than what I'm doing now. And it was really after I'd been chief of cardiology for 16 years that it was Dean Jameson, Kevin Mahoney, and Arthur a bit who reached out to me and said, Mike, would you consider applying for the position of chair of medicine? And I told them all, no interest. I'm happy doing what I'm doing. They eventually convinced me to try it as an interim chair. And I recognized almost immediately that I was loving the position. All the challenges that I couldn't solve myself as a division chief, I potentially could address as chair of medicine. I also realized that, to be fair about this, this was the time for me to do it. I had gained 16 years of experience running a division with over 100 faculty. I had done most of what I could do in that division, and those skills would translate to the department. Let me just end by saying, I give people advice every day, and what scares me is I didn't even know what advice to give myself. So I tell everybody, my advice is worth what you're paying for it, which is nothing. And the reality is, I think you got to take it all with a grain of salt. And let me just say, this is the best job I've ever had. I love, well, I don't love every day, but most days I love. And you know, I've loved working with our faculty, staff, trainees through the pandemic. This has been something that's been inspiring to me. So I consider myself very lucky.
Thanks, Mike. I think it's refreshing because I think so many of us feel so much pressure, like, oh, I have to have it all figured out and I have to know exactly what job I want in 5 years and what track I'm on and what I have to be doing. So I appreciate hearing that it even surprised you that you liked it as much as you did and moved in this direction after sort of being pretty adamant. And we're very lucky that you changed your mind. Tom, I would love to hear a little bit about your own career path leading up to your role here at Penn Medicine.
Sure. So I started out in management consulting, and I was quickly drawn to healthcare. We had a few clients that were in healthcare, and the mission very much resonated with me, and in areas that didn't have mission that I was engaged in, I had less interest in. So when I went back to business school, I focused in on healthcare and quality management, knowing that at minimum, I had this sort of field marked on. I didn't know that going in, but certainly I felt the field, I had the field down, and I went into academic medicine right after business school, quality management, business development. It was a lot of project management work, performance improvement. I did that on the hospital side for about 12, 15 years. And so I spent a good amount of my time actually in the hospital arenas and in working there in finance as well. So in the finance component, I got the chance to work with administrators on the physician practice side. You don't know what you don't know. And I saw how folks were working. They had P&Ls and they had budgetary responsibilities. So there was the work, which is much more of a line management role, general management, but you also have the capacity to make move resources and see the fruits of those decisions and the labor. So I made that jump towards the end of my when I was originally at the Brigham, and it was fantastic for me. Very challenging making a jump out in from project management into this role. But I've been doing this type of role now for 15 years. The scale has gotten larger, but it's hard for me to find the combination of ownership and the capacity to actually be part of the operation and be so close to the mission.
Thanks, Tom. Really helpful. Mike, let me go back to you. So you were in the interim chair role and then decided that you wanted to take on the position, and the COO role is just so critical. I know you went to Surge and getting that match right was going to be so important for your success. What made you pick Tom?
You're right, Cindy. And the story I like to tell everybody is my father was class of Wharton 53. My daughter was class of Wharton 15, I think. My father actually early on, I have to say, really didn't think doctors were very good businessmen. And as I took on administrative roles, it was my father that said to me, the one thing you need to do is find yourself the best business person you can work with and listen to him or her and learn from him or her and partner with him or her so that you can do what you know how to do. And that's really to focus on the mission and direct what are our priorities. I've at every stage of my career, I've recognized that point. And the first recruit I've made in all my jobs, both as chief of cardiology and more recently as chair of medicine, was to make sure I really thought I had an outstanding COO or DDA or whatever the position was at that time. So we did a national search. At the time, medicine's administration was going through a lot of changes. And I said, we want to take it, start over basically from the top down, other than Marianne. Marianne is the one person that was here when I got here. She'll be here when I leave. I gotta say, Marianne is the glue that holds this place together. But other than Marianne, we were in transition. And we did a national search, and we had several outstanding candidates. But when I met Tom, everything clicked. It was everything I was looking for in terms of at his level. And this is what distinguishes Tom in my mind. You need not only operational skills, but financial skills, because you got to put them both together. And it's the people that can see both sides of that and work together to reach decisions strategically. That is really what I'm looking for. I also need somebody that doesn't take me too seriously, that'll stand up to me, that will tell me, you're wrong. We can't afford to do that. We're not doing it. And I know I need to listen to Tom or to whoever's in that position. So I need somebody I trust, and I need someone strong enough that they will, they do see things in ways I don't understand. I've learned a ton from Tom. I really can look at those spreadsheets now. I'm the head of CPUP Finance. I couldn't even look at a spreadsheet like this 7 years ago. I know which lines to look at. I even understand Jim Rush sometimes. So, I mean, things are really, and I give Tom credit. He's taught me a lot. So all I'll say is, and just to be very clear about this, all the recruitment down under, we have 12 divisions. We've probably recruited 8 or 9 or 10 DDAs in the 7 years. Tom has done all of that. He's trained them. He works with them. It's just incredibly important that you need. I knew we had the physician side. I knew we had the science side. I knew we had the education side. I needed the administrative side, and Tom has built that for us.
Thank you, Tom. It makes me kind of like feel so like happy that I love Mike gushing over you. Did you know right away that this was going to click for you as well? I mean, you took a big chance coming here and moving your family and changing things. Like, how did you pick Mike? What was it about him?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. We actually had moved to the area about a year and a half before. And things were going well. I was commuting. Penn was, the role came open. Penn was the only place, it was the only person I talked to. It was Penn and Mike. It was right away. I think it took 4 weeks or 6 weeks in terms of the process. I did want to come back to the area, but I wasn't just coming back. I wasn't coming to the area. I was coming for this opportunity in particular. Who you work with when you're in a COO or you're in this situation is it's all the difference. I had a great relationship with the chair at UMass in Worcester as well. At the same time, you have to know who you work best with. And, Mike is a straight shooter. And we can have direct conversations, very clear, sound logic and, a business. Mike will say, I always said he's a physician in a white, he's a CEO in a white coat. He had the genes. And so we've always had the capacity to have business discussions. So that was significant. I also think, Mike talks about 15 years as chief of cardiology. If you know about, departments of medicine and chiefs of cardiology or just cardiology in general, somebody who's been a chief of cardiology at an institution like Penn for 15 years, that was the kind of person that I wanted to work with from my own professional development. Mike's capacity to think organizationally, how to integrate and navigate, that's what I needed to learn professionally. That's where I was. So it really linked. And then lastly, I do also, the other thing that did come into, I thought that I could help. Can I help in driving Mike's vision forward? Can I, you know, support that and support where the department was headed and how Mike wanted to get there? And I felt I could help. And I always look for places where I can help. What's needed, and can I meet those needs?
Thanks, Tom. I think that goes back to kind of that mission, vision-driven spirit that you talked about earlier in terms of what's driven your career. I'd love to turn it over to the audience and ask the audience, what made you select your partner or your boss or to come to Penn Medicine to partner with someone? What was it about the connection that you felt like you'd be good partners? You've heard Mike and Tom kind of tell their perspective. I'd love to hear those in the audience.
So Cindy, yeah. while they're answering, because I want to tell you a good story about how this really happened. So, and I don't know who's listening, but hopefully they won't hear this whole story. But in any case, my predecessor, Chair of Medicine, Rick Shannon, resigned the day before I went on my 2-week vacation in Nantucket. And so it was that period where medicine didn't have an interim chair either. And at that point, Kevin Mahoney was assigned the job of getting me to agree to be the interim chair. And he ruined my vacation. I gotta say, to this day, Kevin would call me every morning with more and more and more and more. It was the worst vacation ever. Thank you, Kevin. And to this day, he still owes me. So I just wanna go on record. And by the end of vacation, I had signed. It's all true. I still remember a call. He was on conference call. I think Dean Jameson was driving his car. And they finally said, you know, you got to do it. And so I finally agreed. But it was the worst vacation ever. And Kevin owes me for that. I'm on record.
Thank you for going on record. Appreciated. And Kevin can be very persuasive. So I get that. All right, people are saying entrepreneurial spirit. Barbara's boss had the same management philosophy, hire and work with people who are better than you at what they do and you'll be successful in all ways. Eileen said honesty, availability, trust. James, hi James, said mission, character of the people, the quality of leadership. Hi Amanda, common vision and connection to the community. Carol said that she felt like she found a home that she could grow and contribute. That's great. So, Mike, you talked a little bit about some of the things that in the beginning you really selected Tom for. When you think about how your partnership with your administrative partner works, or in general, what are the things that you really rely on Tom for, and how has that evolved as you've grown as a leader?
It's a really good question, and it's multidimensional in terms of my answer, in terms of things I depend upon Tom on. Tom and I like to talk about the blocking and the tackling of these jobs. Do the basics. When we started off, it was, I hate to say it, we didn't have job descriptions. We started off by saying, I didn't even know, Cindy, you taught me about responsibility mapping. We had to do all that stuff from scratch. We had to say who's responsible for what. And Tom, and again, Tom is very good at structure. He's much better at structure than I am, and he understands it. He even knows how to do the program to make an org chart, which to this day I can't do. But Tom really said that we're going to structure this whole thing correctly, and that was just critically important to the department. And we needed to increase our operational expertise, our financial expertise, marry them together, and then figure out what were the pieces we needed. One of the key lessons in leadership, in terms of leadership training, when I've taught people, is really strategic decision making. First, you identify the structure, then you identify the position, then you recruit the person. It's not the other way around. You recruit them for those skills. And Tom is extremely good at that. But that's not really enough, giving him credit, because that's the blocking and tackling part of administration. The reality is we were changing a culture, and changing the culture, system change is hard. The hardest thing you ever have to do. Our department was struggling, certainly financially. We had remarkably talented faculty. We've always had that, and trainees and staff and everything, but it wasn't working. The pieces didn't work together. And part of it was we had to move from what I would call a culture of dependency. Everything was opaque. There was never any real system in place where people said, if I do this, I will get that, or I'm responsible for that. The one of accountability and responsibility and empowerment. And everything we've done has been to empower the faculty, the staff, the trainees, you name it. And Tom is very thoughtful in terms of aligning, for instance, the incentives to get us there. We told the divisions that they're responsible for their own finance. That wasn't the way. It used to go into the big, when I was chief of cardiology, I used to call medicine the abyss because all our money went in, but it never came out. The reality was we let our divisions know exactly what's going on. We're transparent about it. And Tom believes and sets things up that way and helps me immensely with that. So a lot of things, but it's not a simple answer.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Tom, let me ask you the same question. What do you rely on Mike for? And maybe even expanding that to when you're working with your own division administrators, what do they rely on their clinical partners for?
So, you know, being on the administrative side, most of us do not have not been clinicians. We have, we do shadow, and now as part of our work that we bring on managers, we shadow physicians in the exam room. So we understand how that experience is and what the challenges are to some degree. At the same time, we're here to support the missions and the directions. And that is going to be, has to be from the clinical faculty, has to be from the division chiefs in their areas, and it's got to be from the chair. And so that is the core key piece. When you're talking about faculty practices and faculty practice management, it's about quality of care at its core. And that is achieved through not just the execution on the clinical side, but the research and the education on the input side. So you really can't do that as an administrator. You may think you know, but this is my humble opinion. I just don't think that. So they are really the source of understanding where things need to go nationally. They know all this. Mm-hmm. I've always felt like as an administrator, it's always about going around talking to the faculty, talking to the chiefs, talking to the chair. And given what they're saying, our job is to put it together and say, how can we operationalize that? When can we operationalize it? Those sorts of things. So when we're talking about what a COO or I think at the DDA is, it is really being in touch and being aware of the environment, where the energy is going, and what the direction is of the chiefs. And then for us, it's about how and how might we enable that. So all that has to happen. And then I will say, when it comes to execution, you know, the faculty are going to follow the chief, the faculty are going to follow the chair. And so the chair really plays the key role in communication and has to. And if you want, I think, you want to really drive change sustainable, and you need to, if you need, it needs to come from there. We need to support that.
So it sounds like you have a real clear perspective on what's your tasks and what your support role is, what Mike needs to do. What are the things that you do to maintain a good partnership? How have you built your relationship? How do you maintain that partnership? I'd love to hear from you, Tom, and then I'll turn it over to Mike.
So we talk, and we just keep talking, and we don't stop talking. And it doesn't matter the topic, and it could be politics, it could be social justice, it could be anything. It could be cars, you know. But we talk and we bounce things up, down, and sideways. We shake the tree. We're getting all the coins out of the pockets. But that's, I think that is the core key thing. And Mike said it. You know, he wanted the ability to have a dialogue. And I do think it's that dialogue where you come up with things that you would not come up with on your own.
Mike, same question. What do you do to build your partnership with Tom?
I mean, Tom said it. It's really about communication. That being said, I think it's fair to say that both Tom and I sometimes aren't in the best place. That mentally we come to work and we're upset about something. One of the most valuable things he does for me and I do for him is, and it's Tom who gave me the motto, don't play small ball. There may be a small little issue that I'm upset about. Usually I'm disappointed in a person, actually, and their decision-making and why they reached the decision. And oftentimes it's not an important issue. In no way is my emotions really commensurate with whatever it is I'm upset about. And we sometimes, and Tom will see that in me, and sometimes we'll make a decision to step back. Don't take it on or give it up because we need to live to fight another day. And the reality is that we do, we've worked together now for 7 years. He sees it in me. I see it in him. We both know each other well enough that we can keep ourselves sort of going forward. I'd also say one other thing. It may sort of relate to your last question more than this one because I was thinking about it. And I think it's important for certainly if there's doctors listening or chiefs or chairs or anybody in those positions. I didn't realize, and it was really not until I was in this position working with Tom, that there is a what I call administrative culture within organization. There are certain issues where administrators like to talk to administrators, and they don't want the doctors in the room, me especially. And the reality is, some people, I think it was Beth Johnson told me, that's how we make sausage was her quote. But the reality is, I've come to rely upon Tom to have those discussions when we're doing the RTR process or when we're doing the negotiations around rebasing. That's something where the administrators like to talk to other administrators. And for whatever reason, it's much more effective than having doctors in there like doing whatever we do, screwing it up. And the reality is Tom is exceptionally good at that. And that's not something I got to say that I ever appreciated before I was in this position. But now I respect it immensely. And I see that as a positive thing, actually. It's a subtle thing that I think many people, myself included, don't appreciate. But there is a layer that I am totally dependent upon this administrative infrastructure or system to get things done. And they work better when they talk to each other. So I just want to throw that out there because that's not something I can do.
Thanks. Great point. I'd love to ask the audience, what are the things that you do to build your relationship with your physician or administrative partner? Want to give a shout out to Dr. Rich Wender, the chair of family medicine, who said, we sometimes look at conversations that are not directly related to our jobs as nice stuff that's separate from the work. But Tom really emphasizes that these conversations are a part of the work. So I have to ask, when you're talking about cars, are you talking about any specific cars in particular? You like both love cars. Is that like a thing?
We do, and we are talking about specific cars. We're debating whether Tom should wait till they come out with the electric model of the Ford F-150 or buy the hybrid. He was struggling with that decision, and I could tell he couldn't get anything done because he was perplexed. So I said, why don't you just lease it for 2 years, see if you like it, you won't be all in on that. And so then he was able to work the rest of the day because he wasn't getting anything done that day until we resolved that problem. That happened 3 days ago, I think.
Priorities.
Well, I'm so glad. Hashtag priorities. Tom, is it ever hard to tell Mike maybe something he doesn't want to hear? Or how do you have to navigate conflict? I know you're very confident in sharing the truth, but maybe not everyone feels as confident in managing up as perhaps the two of you are because you're so seasoned in your career. So what's it like for you and Mike when you have to have that hard conversation? And two, any advice that you'd give to people who perhaps maybe struggle with saying the hard truth to someone in authority?
Yeah. In terms of now and the way it works, Mike expects that from me. Mike wants that from me. So I have no obstacle. That is what I'm supposed to. I feel that that's in my job. And I actually have always felt like these are the whenever there's a challenging discussion, it's actually my job to have that discussion, those difficult discussions. At the same time, it's easier with Mike because that's the expectation, and there are no obstacles. I would also say, if I were to give any advice on this, I think it's all in the way that it gets set up. It's all in the way that when you first meet somebody, and it's that first day on the job, and it's that first how you communicate, that you let folks know we're going to be able to have frank conversations. And so we've always done that. And I think it's important, though, that you sort of set that up on day one, because you can fall into a pattern.
Thanks. Really helpful. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. We've had some great things come into the chat in terms of what people do. Cindy said it's invaluable to get to know each other as people beyond the formal role. People care about others. Communication, definitely number one from Allison. Expectation setting up front, honesty and caring from Maggie. Those are very helpful. So you've talked a lot about what you've learned from each other. When you're supporting each other's growth and development, is this just natural and an inherent part of the conversation? Or are there specific structural things that you do to support each other's growth and development? Thoughts on that?
That's a good question, Sin. Honestly, most of it comes naturally. I will say, last year in the COO evaluation process where they changed it, I think you were involved in coming up with some of those questions. One of them was, what do you want to do next after this job? What are you? And I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't want them to do anything next. And I'm thinking like, but I'm going to have to ask this question to prepare him for whatever's next, because in the end of the day, he should do what he needs to do. And he's got remarkable skills. But I will say, to your point, Cindy, and I know you believe in this because this is something you taught me, that there are competency-based questions that you can ask for professional development. See, I listened to you, Sin.
I know.
There's 26 competencies. I can do them all. But those are the questions that I think we cover. But I will say the process last year, though a bit too long and formal, but because I don't do long and formal well. But the bottom line is, I do think that process puts structure to the discussion. And if you're like me, where you don't usually structure any discussion, it is helpful.
Thanks.
Yeah, I would tack on to that, that process allows you to put markers out into the future, and we don't know timelines, but we know what would it take for me to get there. And what are those issues that I need to, work on in order to do that. And again, knowing the direction, knowing where things are going, I think is really helpful. We just had, one of these things just came up, and here it was, and I'm like, okay. And I went in Mike's office. I'm like, here's the situation. Really need some guidance here. And that was right along with the plan. And that's how it works on a day to day.
Yeah. My advice to Tom was, don't get in a pissing match. That was the exact advice I gave him, which I find very helpful. So I'm very good with this very high level thinking.
Very good. I appreciate that. And I want to give a huge shout out to George Crowley, Gretchen Youngin, and everyone who was involved in helping to really refine that feedback process. And I'm glad you're finding it helpful. And Mike, thanks for your feedback. We'll look for ways to make it a little less formal, a little less long. We're continuing to evolve tools and resources for leaders to have conversations like the one that's a little uncomfortable to say, what do you want to do next? I mean, no one wants people to leave, but we got to help people continue to grow their career. So I appreciate your transparency on that one. Aaron said, leadership can be so isolating. It's important to have someone you can be completely transparent with and bounce ideas off of. Being open in communication is key to fostering a good relationship. I agree, Aaron. Great comment. So I would love to ask the audience, how do you and your partners, do you have any rituals to strengthen your relationships, or how do you stay connected? Mike, Tom, did COVID change how you guys work together at all? Are you missing each other? It looks like you're both in the office. Have you been in the office? Do you still see each other as much?
Me and Tom, we see each other every day.
All right, just making sure.
I mean, no. It's an interesting thing. Let's talk about COVID for a minute.
Yeah, thank you for both of you and your teams. The leadership was nothing short of amazing.
Well, again, it's been the most inspiring but most challenging part of my career, and I just wish it would end. But I think we got a little bit to go still. But the bottom line is, I realized early on I work better in my office. And I don't have kids at home anymore, so I can't blame that for the reason why. I just focus here. I have nothing disturbing me. And it really helps to have Tom two doors down. Because we can work together that way. I really don't like Zoom, BlueJeans, Teams. It doesn't feel right to me. And what I've learned by watching my faculty and everybody I interact with is some people are fine with Zoom and Teams and that life. But there's other people, I will say this, and I'll call them out, that we all live on a spectrum in terms of how much social interaction you need to be energized and to function. I'm going to call him out because I mean this as a compliment. But Greg Tino is the most social person I know, the chief of medicine at Presby. I mean, he needs to talk to people. And he doesn't do well with Zoom at all. So I realized that I needed to make myself available, masked and distanced, from anyone that wanted to talk to me in person during this thing. Again, I think everybody handles it differently. I really worry about the social people who are locked in their house as they should be following the rules. I just see the stress in those people sometimes, and it really makes me concerned. It's something you don't realize, and I've seen it again and again and again, and I just hope this ends soon because I love coming into work. And I've been lucky enough to be able to do it throughout the pandemic.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And I would say, as somebody who needs some social, I've like managed, but as this goes on, I'm like, oh my God, when are we going back to like some semblance of in person? I'm missing the real energy, not through the screen. Although I want to just keep everyone as safe as possible. So I feel you on that. Tom, any insights that you've gained as a leader through this COVID experience?
So, I with COVID, it's fascinating, but the timeline and your timeline of what you're looking at shrinks. Like it went, usually yeah. I was trying to work about 3 years out. Whatever I was doing, I was thinking we'd see the benefits of 3 years out. Right now, we're working, 3 weeks out, 2 weeks out. It is a total game changer. It is about hunkering down and assuring that key foundational things are maintained. And because just as Mike was saying, with folks on Zoom and not having those social connections and interplay, it is easy for things to dissipate, particularly I think in academic medicine where everybody is so capable of moving in different directions all the time. So again, how we focus in and keep things in the sort of hedgehog approach that Collins talks about at times, that's what it's been for a year for me, is really hedgehog and support, in terms more support to the divisions.
Thanks. One thing I want to say, because one of the positive outcomes of COVID has been, I like to say COVID has put a spotlight on organizational strengths and weaknesses. And I would generally like to say our country's strengths and weaknesses, but we're not going to go there today. And what I've learned through COVID is I've identified the next generation of leaders in this department, because we have seen people step up in amazing ways and lead arguably before they were thought of as leaders or before they were ready to be leaders. And I know going forward who I can rely on. And there's probably others I'm unaware of, to be fair. But I have a whole new group of people that I'm looking towards. And I think our future is incredibly bright because COVID really allowed leadership to stand out. It allowed gaps in leadership to stand out as well, I'll say. But the reality is, more often than not, I've identified leadership strengths that I didn't know we had in our department, and now I know where we can look. And it's really been helpful, and I hope that we can leverage that experience into the future and strengthen ourselves.
That's great. I've heard this from many. It really, the uncertainty, the complexity, the ambiguity really shines a light on those leaders who have some of that innate potential to roll with the punches, to be really agile, to figure stuff out on the fly. And I think we all saw people who can thrive under those conditions. And some of our stars, they thrive with a more routine way of existing. It doesn't mean it's bad. It's just a different way of looking at things. And so I'm really glad to hear that you're capitalizing on some of those learnings.
Yes, so and just to be clear on that point, because I think it's a really important point. There are many leaders who are outstanding leaders who have really built programs and done great things that for whatever reason during COVID, this did not play to their strengths. They continue to lead and they continue to do a good job. And they should be, you know, recognized for those accomplishments. But COVID identified a certain type of person. Again, I think that it was somebody, we talk about reactive sort of leadership styles versus more deliberative styles. And you had to be reactive during COVID because it was moving too fast. As an example, literally, we were all pretty excited. The numbers of COVID patients were dropping at all the hospitals. And in the last 2 or 3 days, HUP has picked up 20 new COVID patients.
And now we're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, we are. And yesterday afternoon, we were like, okay, bring back the gang. How are we going to handle it this time? And we've identified a group of people that are just really resilient. And we know we have to be proactive in our planning. I've never used my Ben Franklin quote more. How does the quote go? If you don't prepare to fail, well, I'll think about that later. But Ben Franklin said it: prepare to fail, or you will fail. Whatever it is, but he was a smart guy. In any case, the reality is that we have a group of people that recognize that preparation is the key to COVID, and we have to anticipate and do contingency planning, and that's been incredibly helpful.
That's great. So thank you very much for this. I want to just, we only have like 3 minutes left, in like 30 seconds or less, lightning round. Any one key experience that helped you become the leader that you are today? 30 seconds or less. Mike, let me start with you. I'll give Tom a minute to think about it.
Yeah. I was, my best friend in medical school was Mike Parsegan. His father was the football coach at Notre Dame, Eric Parsegan. Mike had 3 kids born with Niemann-Pick C, a horrible neurodegenerative disease. When that happened, I was a research guy, and I put together a scientific advisory board for the Eric Parsegan Medical Research Foundation. And we were able to really move the research forward in that disease. And my friends who were on the board, who were other physician scientists working with me, said, you know, this leadership thing, bringing together groups, is really something you should think about. And that really convinced me to start looking at these sorts of leadership opportunities, that one experience.
That's amazing. Tom, same question, lightning round.
Sure. And this happened early when I made the jump into, you know, an administrative role. But it was at the Brigham, and I was working with the chair there. And, you know, you can have situations where you have principles and you have guidelines. And at times, those can actually limit what the opportunities are. And what he said to me, this is about an office for a faculty. It's simple things. You know, it's about an office for a faculty. We had certain principles, and of course, but you know, you have competing needs. And he just looked at me and says, you know, well, what is the need? And let's start there. I get the principles, but let's solve for the need. And so I often, you know, reflect on that quite a lot. And so, yeah, we have principles. Yes, we have guidelines. But in every situation, there is the need. And are we addressing the needs?
Thanks. By failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. Thank you for those
Thank
who
you,
know
Cindy.
That. Yeah. They are very present words of advice. I would love to hear any recommendations that people have in the chat for what they've been doing for their own joy and energy and rejuvenation. Mike, Tom, what a pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show today. I'm really grateful for our partnership, for your leadership here, for really modeling what a successful dyad can look like, and your transparency with us today. So thanks so much for joining me in conversation. All right, let me talk a little bit about what's coming up next. We have an amazing show next in 2 weeks. It will be on April 8th. It's called Elegant Offboarding and Transition Planning Essentials. And we have two great guests, Jan Bergen, the outgoing president and CEO of Lancaster General, who is retiring, and Charmaine Rochester, who has just transitioned to become the senior vice president and chief financial officer at LG. Before that, she was at Chester County. So we really want to learn from Jan, from Charmaine, about their own approach to transitioning, to offboarding. And we have a great new tool, and Gretchen Kolb from PMA will join us to talk a little bit about some of the best practices. We have a great shows coming up in the next few months, so I hope you'll continue to tune in. We've really heard from you that we want to know, how do we navigate difficult conversations now? Knowing resilience is down and it's virtual at times, we have masks on. How do we handle this? So Catherine Morrison will be joining us. She is an external expert. She's trained as an attorney. Mike and Tom know her very well, as some of the medicine folks do. She's awesome, so you won't want to miss that show. We'll have even better shows coming up for you in the May timeframe, and we'll announce that next time. So I want to say thank you for joining us. Thank you for all that you continue to do. Together, we're getting through this, so thank you so much. There are a couple of reminders and housekeeping tips around signing out CME and CNE credits. Make sure you are promoting our show by sending the link on the Lead Strong page. Thank you. We're really listening, so we welcome your feedback on things that you'd like to see as the show continues. Keep up the good fight, and I'll see you next in 2 weeks. Thanks, everyone.